Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Ellie MacArthur. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. A conservation project in Eastern Ontario has earned major recognition. Watersheds Canada, a national nonprofit dedicated to protecting Canada's lakes and rivers, took home the Small Project Conservation Award at this year's Water Canada Awards for a winter restoration project on Big Clear Lake in central Frontenac Township. The community-driven project rebuilt a crucial walleye spawning bed, supporting an important native species and a cornerstone of the local fishery. This project is one of 68 completed across 44 bodies of water in central eastern Ontario since the Fish Habitat Program began 12 years ago. I spoke with Melissa Dakers, Habitat and Stewardship Program Manager with Watersheds Canada, about what this award has meant for her and her team and the work behind the project.
It celebrates not just our staff, but all the volunteers, the partners, and Indigenous leaders that we've worked with who make this work possible. It's a national acknowledgement that community-based conservation really works, and it gives everyone involved a lot of encouragement to keep going.
And the winning project was the Winter Walleye Spawning Bed Restoration Project on Big Clear Lake. I was wondering if you could give us a bit of an overview of what that was all about and why it needed to be done.
Yes. So Big Clear Lake, it has a historic walleye spawning bed that had become degraded over some time. We started this project actually in 2023 with our team and volunteers washing the spawning bed with high pressure water pumps and hoses. We scrubbed the rocks with brushes and removed all the algae and silt from the rock substrate. And then the second part of our project was actually supposed to take place the winter of 2024. But if you remember, last winter, it was extremely mild and the ice safety was actually a major concern for us. So we rescheduled it to 2025 to keep everyone safe. And so last winter in February, our team, along with our partners and local volunteers, we restored the site by laying down 17 tons of washed, clean river rock over the frozen lake, right above the spawning bed. And that rock actually creates the perfect spawning habitat for walleye, which are an important native species and a big part of the local ecosystem and fishery. It was cold, hard work, but the results will help keep this lake healthy for years to come. And this project was actually supported by Environment and Climate Change Canada's Environmental Damages Fund with permits and approvals from the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources and Fisheries and Oceans Canada. And it's one of 68 habitat projects that we've completed through our fish habitat program over the last 12 years.
Wow, 68, geez. And, I mean, we've seen a decline in fish habitat across central and eastern Ontario. How does this project and all those other projects you guys are working on kind of help turn the tides?
Projects like this, they not only bring the community together, but what we're trying to do is make people aware of how helping to restore fish habitat can actually change a fishery on a lake. So by also planting your shorelines and reducing erosion so that there's not as much silt on the spawning beds, we can make a really big impact to our fisheries.
And you kind of got into this, but I was wondering if you could speak a bit more to how local volunteers and community partners were involved in this project.
Yeah, so honestly, this community was incredible, as are all the communities that we work with. But local volunteers, they brought their snow machines, their ATVs, and a ton of energy out onto a frozen lake to help move and spread the rock amidst a snowstorm. We were also closely working with the Big Clear Lake Association. GE Mattson and Sons Construction were there and donated time. And so were the Shabbat Obadjuwon First Nation and Chief Doreen Davis even joined us that day, and she called it one of the building blocks of your life, which really captured how meaningful it actually was to have us all there. That shared spirit, people coming together to care for the land and the water, that's what makes these projects so powerful.
Mm-hmm. And moving forward, how can folks in the Kingston region get involved with projects like this and support your initiatives?
Yeah, there's lots of ways that people can get involved. People can visit watersheds.ca to learn about upcoming volunteer opportunities, shoreline restoration projects, or ways to donate to future fish habitat work. We are a nonprofit national charity located in Perth, Ontario, and we raise all our funds through donations, foundations, and grants. So personal donations are really greatly appreciated. And then even small actions at home, like keeping your shoreline natural or reducing runoff by planting native plants on a shoreline, can make a really big difference for water quality and for fish habitat. Every bit of local involvement helps protect the lakes and rivers that we all enjoy.
Once again, that was Melissa Dakers with Watersheds Canada. To learn more about their fish habitat programs, volunteer opportunities, and other ways to support future restoration work, you can visit watersheds.ca. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. This is your Queen's Campus News on CFRC's Queen's Campus Beat. I'm Henry Walker. Queen's University is speaking out following the circulation of an offensive Instagram video that surfaced earlier this month. The video, reported to contain transphobic, anti-Semitic, and sexually violent language, appears to have been filmed in Kingston's University District. While the individuals speaking in the video are not believed to be affiliated with Queen's University, the university itself has issued a firm condemnation of the content, calling it deeply disturbing. In its statement, Queen's emphasized its commitment to fostering a safe, inclusive, and respectful campus environment. Students are reminded that resources are available through Campus Wellness Services, the Human Rights and Equity Office, and specialized gender diversity support programs. The university is encouraging anyone affected by the incident to reach out for support or to report concerns through established equity and harassment channels. Looking to the future, Queen's is gearing up for one of its biggest annual outreach events. Booth registration is now open for the Science Rendezvous Kingston 2026, which returns on May 9th. This free, family-friendly science festival brings thousands of visitors to downtown Kingston each spring. It features live demonstrations, interactive experiments, robotics, chemistry shows, and exhibits from Queen's researchers, labs, and student teams. Anyone interested in hosting a booth, whether you're part of a faculty, or a student group, or a community organization, can now register through the Science Rendezvous website. A virtual information session held earlier this month provided guidance for new exhibitors, and recordings are available for those who missed it. Organizers say they expect this year's event to be one of the largest yet. Additionally, the latest edition of the Queen's Alumni Review has just been released, offering a look at some of the major projects and initiatives underway across campus this fall. One highlight is the continued Agnes Etherington Arts Center renovations, part of the long-term Agnes Reimagined project. While the main building remains closed for construction, the Agnes team is running an active program of off-site exhibitions and community events. These are taking place in the Rideau building and in several partner locations across Kingston. The university also released its draft bicentennial vision, a planning document looking ahead to Queen's 200th anniversary in 2041. The draft outlines priorities including research leadership, community engagement, sustainability, and long-term financial resilience. Feedback from campus consultants will continue to shape the final version before it goes to the Board of Trustees. And as many may recall, Queen's once again marked the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation earlier this fall by pausing academic activities and hosting events focused on Indigenous histories and healing. Restoration work on some of the university's historic structures, including the iconic castle-style building near Summerhill, was also highlighted in the campus update. Thank you for listening. This has been your Queen's Campus Beat.
This week in YGK Sports. Queens Fencing headed to St. Catharines this weekend for the Brock Fencing Open. The two-day tournament saw Gales Allison Wang and Graham Wood take home bronze in junior women's and junior men's foil, respectively. Other highlights of the tournament for Queens included a fifth-place finish for Tatiana Gajowski in senior women's sabre and a sixth-place finish for Graham Goodwin in senior men's épée. In an interview with CFRC, women's foil captain Sophie Kitson and men's sabre captain Luigi Borgiato celebrated the team's wins, highlighting the number of competitors at the tournament.
This is like the biggest tournament of the season, so it's a lot of people from all different backgrounds. So like you get the OUA circuit and you also get like the people who've been fencing their whole life. So like I think this is by far the most competitive tournament that we have.
Yeah.
So having like a top 16 finish is like really, really big.
They also noted that as many university teams competed, it was a good chance to prepare for the Ontario University Athletics, or OUA, championships in the new year. There, Kitson and Borgiato hope to see the team deliver strong finishes, as they did last season, winning a bronze for the women's team overall and a silver for the men's sabre team.
Yeah, this weekend was super fun. It kind of gives us this tournament, since it's such a big tournament and we fence a lot of the OUA circuit, it gives us a bit of insight into like how OUAs might go this year. And I think it's going to be good. I'm very hopeful for OUAs this year.
In other Queens varsity news, men's rugby took home fifth place at the Canadian University Men's Rugby Championship on Sunday. The team fell to the Victoria Vikes in their first match of the competition, but went on to secure victories in a consolation semifinal against Dalhousie University and a consolation final against Université de Montréal. The Guelph Griffins took home gold at the championship. It was a disappointing weekend for St. Lawrence College volleyball, as both men's and women's teams faced losses against the Algonquin College Wolves on Saturday. The women's team fell to the Wolves in a close 5-set match, while the men's team lost in 3 straight sets. This weekend also saw back-to-back wins for the Kingston Frontenacs on home ice. The team beat the Niagara Ice Dogs 4-3 on Friday in overtime and the Sarnia Sting 5-2 on Sunday. Next up, the Fronts will face the Ottawa 67s on Wednesday at Slush Puppy Place in Kingston. This was CFRC's YGK Sports Minute. See you next week.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, November 24th, daytime high of 6 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to 4 overnight. Tuesday, November 25th, rainy day here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of 8 degrees with about a 70% chance of precipitation, dropping down to 6 overnight. Wednesday, November 26th, warmest day of the week, 10 degrees in the forecast with an 85% chance of precipitation. That rain is going to cool things off quite a bit, however, as we will drop down to 0 overnight. Thursday, November 27th, 4 degrees is your high, but it's going to feel much colder, actually feeling closer to minus 4. 65% chance of precipitation, which means we are going to see periods of light snow throughout the day, dropping down to minus 2 overnight, which is going to feel closer to minus 6. Friday, November 28th, 1 is your daytime high with a little bit of sunshine in the forecast, but it's going to be very chilly, feeling closer to minus 7, so bundle up when you're out and about. Saturday, November 29th, high of 0, and it's not going to be as bone-chillingly cold, just a low of minus 2 that will feel like minus 2. Sunday, November 30th, daytime high of 3 degrees, mix of rain and snow in the forecast, dropping down to just below freezing overnight. And then the start of December, Monday, December 1st, daytime high of 5 degrees with a 63% chance of precipitation. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, King to Stewart is closed November 25th to 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for the removal of a large tree. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Raglan Road, Division 2 Main, closed until November 30th from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day for gas main installation. Toronto Street, Durham to Park, is closed until November 28th for installation of new water, sanitary, and storm services. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardner's, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, San Beta Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Hey, this is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. It's time for our concerts calendar for the week of November 24th to the 30th. Kingston has a stacked week of live music, from cozy vibes to big stages, so let's dive right in. On Monday, start your week with a rock lineup at the Mansion featuring Distant, Demon Eyes, False Gods, and Ascension Blacklist. Doors are at 7 p.m. Or if you'd prefer something a little bit lighter, Jonathan Jones brings an acoustic set to the Cove Inn at 5 p.m. Also on Monday, a perfect first date spot is live jazz at Musiki starting at 8 p.m. Moving into Tuesday, it's Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam at the RCHA from 4 to 7 p.m. At 7 p.m., the Kingston Youth Orchestra, Youth Strings, and A Strings presents The Art of Melody. This is an incredible chance to hear some of Kingston's young talent on stage. At 7:30 p.m., catch the Soweto Gospel Choir at the Kingston Grand Theater for some lovely jaw-dropping harmonies. And at Time Out Bar, Paula Wood and Friends performs at 6 p.m., and Carrick McAllister hosts Open Mic at Jersey Sports Bar starting at 7 p.m. So if you've been working on something, Tuesday's the time to show it off. On Wednesday at 5:30 p.m., catch Tyler Brett Forks performing at the Bank Gastro Bar. And across the pond, or across the lake, I should say, Hotel Wolf Island starts the evening with DJ Great White from 4 to 7 p.m., followed by their open mic at 7:30 p.m. Also on Wednesday, Wings and Tunes open mic kicks off at the Cove Inn at 5 p.m., and some Kingston favorites, Christopher Jackson at the Creekside Bar and Johnny Kerwin at Time Out Bar, both starting at 6 p.m. On Thursday the 27th, we've got some high energy at the Broom Factory with No Bro and Societal Siege at 7:30 p.m. Meanwhile, at the RCHA, catch Beats Workin' at 7 p.m. and Original Thursdays with Evan Carlson, Ron Steves at the Coven starting at 5 p.m. Emily Trigg is a folk roots musician, and her new album, The Great Escape, just dropped. She is playing at Hotel Wolf Island with John Bora starting at 8:30 p.m. And Time Out Bar has a double bill on Thursday with John McClurg at 4 p.m., followed by Ted Landlone at 7 p.m. Heading into the weekend, on Friday, we've got something for every person and every genre. Starting at the Broom Factory, Charlie Houston's Big After I Die tour is with Last Call and LHRK at 7 p.m. At the RCHA, Kent Nicholson kicks off TGIF Happy Hour at 4 p.m., followed by $5 dates at 8 p.m. Also on Friday, Ontario Festival of Small Halls brings us Ben Kaplan at the Cove Inn starting at 6 p.m. And also at 6 p.m., Scott Owen performs at the Creekside Bar. Another triple bill at the Mansion on Friday with Matt Campbell, Otis Strange, and Lustre at 8 p.m. And also at the Mansion on Friday in the Wine Cellar, catch House in the Mansion Volume 3 starting at 9 p.m. And to round out Friday with some sweet acoustics, we've got Spencer Evans at Time Out Bar starting at 7 p.m., Bon Evans at Tiernan Og at 9 p.m. And if you're after a pre-dinner treat, Chris Morris at the Toucan starts at 5 p.m. Starting off strong on Saturday, November 29th, with Stephen Stanley, No Electric, and Tanya Joy at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. This night is all about storytelling with Stanley's nostalgia and thoughtful rock, as well as Joy's soulful folk. Also on Saturday is GovFest featuring Dewey Roadkill, Retirement Plan, Doing Okay, Veritones, Sweet Pea in the Heat, and Lowry at the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight. This is a charity event, and the money raised through GovFest Kingston is specifically used to fund the local KFLNA United Way, which supports local community projects and provides support systems for vulnerable community members. In addition, 50% of the proceeds from GovFest are used to fund Ryan's Well Foundation, which works to provide consistent access to safe drinking water in developing regions worldwide. Tickets are $20 advance and $25 at the door. There will also be a silent auction, door prizes, and a raffle from local businesses. So swing by the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight on Saturday and support some good music for a good cause. Also on Saturday, the Isabel Voices present a festive celebration at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 2:30 p.m. On Sunday, it's Sunday Fun Day Chicken Pickin' at the Cove Inn from 1 to 4 p.m. And the Queen's Dance Club has their mid-year recital at the Kingston Grand Theater starting at 6 p.m. Thanks so much for joining me. If you have a concert that you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar, reach out at cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link in our bio. Hey, you're listening to CFRC 101.9. My name is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History, and it is time for the events calendar for the week of November 24th to the 30th. As the winter creeps in, there's lots of trivia, community events, performances, and holiday programming, so let's jump right in. Monday is trivia night at Brass Pub starting at 7:45 p.m. and also trivia at Something in the Water Brewing starting at 8 p.m. So grab a friend, grab a drink, and test your knowledge going into this week. On Tuesday, we've got a full day of events. The Kingston Public Market runs in Springer Market Square from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. This also runs on Thursday and Saturday. The market has local produce, sweets, and art, so swing on by. Also on Tuesday, 6 to 8 p.m., join the Community Song Circle at the Kingston Community House. This is open to all voices. And if you're feeling creative, check out Making Art Work, newsletters for creatives with Lucy Liu, hosted online through Union Gallery from 6 to 7:30 p.m. It's Euchre Night at Daft Brewing on Tuesday, starting at 7 p.m., and also at 7 p.m. is Jack's Tuesday Night Trivia. Finally on Tuesday, at the Cove Inn, we have Dramatically Different Drams, a contemplative scotch tasting with Trevor Hayes starting at 6 p.m. So if you're looking for a sophisticated, cozy night, this is the place. On Wednesday, catch the book launch and discussion for Social Innovation for Real World Transformation with Chris Mackey, Julie Piquette, and Jonathan Durand Fulco at the Broom Factory starting at 7 p.m. There's also trivia at Daft Brewing starting at 7 p.m. And as always, warm up those vocal cords on Wednesday. We've got karaoke at Jersey Sports Bar starting at 7 p.m., karaoke at Time Out Bar starting at 8 p.m., and the classic karaoke at the Mansion starting at 9 p.m. On Thursday at 6:30 p.m., The Spire hosts Inspired Aging, a Talks with Docs event, which is a thoughtful and informative series about staying healthy and growing older. And for theater lovers, Guys and Dolls hits the stage at La Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. If you just didn't get enough of karaoke on Wednesday, don't fret. There's karaoke at Tiernan Og starting at 9 p.m. And if you're trying to work out those brain muscles before the weekend, catch trivia at Riverhead starting at 7 p.m. or trivia at Queen's Pub starting at 9 p.m. Some interesting events moving into Friday. At 5:30, Sutherland Hall hosts the Black Innovation in Tech Futures Forum, a discussion and networking opportunity at the intersection of technology and equity. And if you're seeking some holiday vibes, we have the Baroque Christmas Treats at St. James Anglican Church from 5:15 to 7 p.m. with traditional music in a beautiful setting. And theater fans can once again catch Guys and Dolls at La Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. Also on Friday, Reuben in the Dark performs at the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 160 at 7:30 p.m. And finally on Friday, at Wolf Island, the Wolf Island Records Musical Review is at Hotel Wolf Island at 8 p.m. with a showcase of labeled talent. Guys and Dolls continues on Saturday with a 2 p.m. matinee and a 7:30 evening show. At 7:30 p.m., Kingston Grand Theatre presents Barca, a Girovara production, which is an innovative and artistic stage performance. And if you want to participate rather than watch, karaoke at Time Out Bar kicks off at 9 p.m. On Sunday, it is the last chance to catch Guys and Dolls musical at La Sesame Theatre at 2 p.m. There's the Xmas Family Sing-Along at the Spire at 2:30 p.m. This is an all-ages event, so bring your kids and get into the holiday spirit. And finally, as always, wrapping up the week with karaoke at the Toucan, starting at 10:30 p.m. Thank you so much for joining me this week. If you have an event that you'd like to add to our online or on-air event calendar, you can reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Revelation Radio. Explore the sound shaping subculture. Tune in to 101.9 CFRC Wednesdays from 11 to noon to uncover revelations mixed into music from across the alternative scene, underground, and across the globe.
Brothers, the revolution will be live.
Revelation Radio, Wednesdays at 11.
Welcome back to CFRC. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new track by Kingston-based songwriter Sarah O'Neill called This Mess, a song and video that were created by editing together discarded test footage from September 2024. The video explores the creator's connection to her ever-changing mind, body, and image. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream This Mess by Sarah O'Neill on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
I can't write, won't make anything good. I can't find a substitute. Living in truth, my mind's not wide enough. Guess this mess, I guess it's mine. My mind's not wide enough. Guess this mess, I guess it's mine. Mm-hmm.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 293, and I'm Stefan Christoff. Thanks for tuning in. On the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation with artist and musician Richard Skeleton. We talk about an ongoing project that Richard worked on called Imperial Valley. There are four editions. And so it is a project that looks to a particular era in California surrounding a specific region called Imperial Valley. And the project is described this way. These Dust Bowl tonalities were assembled from public domain period recordings ranging from TV and radio broadcasts to documentary and oral history sources. This found material was then extensively reworked and manipulated before being blended with contemporary recordings of acoustic instrumentation to create a richly layered aggregate of folded time. Now, this is a beautiful project musically, and you can learn more about it at richardskeleton.net. But I think also it speaks to a very specific experience in the United States in the context of an economic crisis, the Great Depression, and particularly speaks to a point that I think is not often reflected on, which is the periods of great migration that have happened in the United States. There are many of them. And one of them, of course, is the migration of many people to coastal areas, particularly California, in the context of people looking for sustenance, looking for work, of course, but also due to the extreme economic conditions of the Depression, people moved for their economic livelihood. I think this is important and meaningful to reflect on today as we see so much criminalization of migration in the context of economic migration, which takes place across the Americas. But people are now, in the context of the Trump administration, being criminalized for migrating. So I think this work by Richard Skeleton is a chance to reflect on this time in American history, to imagine it, to think about folded time. And I would interpret that in one way as being the connection between the past and the present and how they mirror and echo each other. So here is my conversation with Richard Skeleton for Free City Radio. And I'll leave it at that. Your work travels to different environments and sonic spaces and encourages those of us being in the sounds that you're sharing to sort of visit those environments. There's obviously a tradition of this practice. Of course, you also work on music in a more sort of traditional format. So the project that I first wrote you about, the Imperial Valley Project, you know, I think it sort of visits some questions around American identity and the sort of sense of place and so a lot of the contradictions, really, because in this moment we see this very charged landscape where even like workers' struggles of the past or like experiences of like physical labor is sort of being co-opted and mixed into this corporate lexicon of an extreme right politics. And, you know, there's just so many challenges there. But I think I appreciated this project because you're going back into that space. But I feel like we actually need to do that. We need to sort of understand where these sort of national mythologies and stories are coming from. And sound, I think, does create a bit more of a reflection space that is a sort of different from like a political essay, for example. All that to say, maybe we could just start by an introduction and talk a bit about this project to start, the Imperial Valley Project. Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you think the project speaks to that kind of big political and cultural landscape that's fulminating at the moment in America. I had no intention of ever approaching that with what I do, and it's, in a sense, Imperial Valley is quite an anomaly in my work I'm coming up to 20 years. Well, I'm just on 20 years now of doing this, and generally speaking, there's almost a divide in what I do between nature and culture, and I veered very much towards nature. And so, in a sense, it's been about trying to build an edifice that is looking and enshrining the natural world in a way that's in and of itself, not in any kind of dialogue with what's happening to the world. I'm not like, oh, the world's dying, so we need to save it, and I'll do some art about that. It's not anything as didactic or as pointed as that. It's just been a way for me to try and find my way in the world itself, and so using whatever artistic means I have to negotiate that. And so 99% of the work that I've done has been about the landscapes that I've lived in, and that's mainly been Northern Britain. I now live in the west of Ireland, so I'm doing a lot of work about that. I spent a while living in Iceland, so that was really interesting. And I often find that when you're in another landscape, it makes you reflect back on the previous places that you've lived in, and it brings them into sharper focus. But in Peel Valley, kind of initially started for me as a way to remember visiting America when I was just out of university, you know. And I saved up as much money as I could, got a summer job, went over to... got the plane over with a friend to Los Angeles. We drove up the coast. We did all the cheesy things. We went out to Las Vegas, and then we rented a car and drove from Las Vegas to the Grand Canyon through Zion National Park in Utah. You know, so we kind of took in a bit of the landscape, and it's that kind of had this sort of latent impression on me that you know, 30 years later, still kind of trying to grasp the difference, because the difference in geography between, say, the UK and mainland America is so incredibly different. My wife's from Thunder Bay. My wife Autumn, she's from Northern Ontario originally, and then her family moved out to British Columbia. And whenever we'd fly over to visit family in Canada, what always struck me is it'd be like an 8-9 hour flight. 3 hours of that you're over the ocean, and then the rest of it you're over the continent of North America. I mean, it's just a massive kind of geography to try and come to terms with. That sort of idea of trying to come to terms with vast expanses was something that I hadn't really done before. And I guess within Peel Valley initially, I'm just trying to scratch that itch. And one of the first things that I do is I go and try and live in a place, and that's just not possible to kind of uproot and go and live in America, to try and sort of bed myself in and do something that I feel is authentic. And so again, Imperial Valley is quite a weird project for me in that I've never actually visited Southern California. I've been to LA and I've been to San Francisco. That's it. So I don't have a grounding in that place. But perhaps that actually freed me up to do something entirely new. And so what I started doing was looking at any kind of archival images that I could. And that's where I came across Dorothea Lange's photography. And it's probably like kind of high school teaching, all about the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl and everything that went along with it, and the New Deal and so on. But for me, as someone from Great Britain, never really kind of cognizant of it. So immersing myself in that, and then the power of Lange's images, and especially the faces as well, but also the landscapes that she was documenting, but the faces of people looking back at her camera, staring into the lens, were really so powerful to me that I felt like I had to do something in response. And so I kind of rather fancifully call them auditory nitrates, a kind of like a nod to the original sort of collodion process of producing photographs with that kind of silver nitrate process. And so the idea, I guess, was to maybe fill in that sonic blankness around the photographs that spoke to me really volubly, and I felt like there was some way of trying to approach that. And this project sort of began around sort of 2020, and I can't really kind of pinpoint how it suddenly become really embroiled in the whole contemporary political and cultural climate that is, as you say, it's bubbling up at the moment. I think possibly I was looking for some archival spoken word stuff, and I just stumbled across this speech by Jerry Voorhees in the I think the late 40s, talking about the necessity of democracy. And at the same time, I get a lot of my news from America through late night comedy. So you know the stuff that you see on YouTube, like Seth Meyers doing like a closer look. I don't know if you're familiar with that, where he's just constantly nailing Trump about all the shit that he's doing. And Stephen Colbert doing his monologues about what's going on. And so it's kind of a strange way of absorbing that kind of life that is in a sense it's so close and yet incredibly far away at the same time, in the sense that, you know, I'm not there, I've not lived it, I don't really know what's going on. And so it's all this kind of secondhand kind of information that's coming through, and that I'm trying to somehow absorb and retransmit in a way that makes sense. I've been recording a lot of the protest stuff that's been broadcast at the moment, like the recent No Kings protests. You know, it feels like there's material there that is really critical. But I don't know how you feel about this, but I wonder at absorbing something that's so current into an artwork, into a does it make it more relevant, or does it date it in some way? It's difficult to tell. I've never really grappled with these ideas, because the ordinarily the stuff that I'm making work about is, you know, it's about deep time, it's about things that have gone on prior to human habitation, so it's all new and rather bewildering for me to try and grapple with.
So just for people to have a little bit more sense of context, can you talk about Dorothea Lange, talk about the images, and just locate us a bit in the particulars and specifics of what you're referencing?
Sure. So as far as I understand it, there was an organization called the Farm Security Administration, I think, that was set up by Roosevelt as part of the New Deal, and it was to try and assist with the difficulties that were going on with in rural America during the Great Depression. And there's a lot of people from what you would call Dust Bowl America that were having to relocate to other parts of America where they could find work, and California was one such site. And in particular, there was a location in Imperial Valley in Southern California where there were these labor camps that people migrated to from, say, Oklahoma. And so Dorothea Lange and other photographers were employed by the FSA to essentially document that whole project. And so the National Library of Congress holds a wealth of these images that are basically photographs of those migrant workers. And I think there's a really famous one called Migrant Mother, I think, and the woman's name was Florence Owen Thompson. And that image became kind of emblematic for the Great Depression and the struggles of rural America in general. But for me, it was there were many other more powerful images in Lange's catalogue that kind of spoke to me really volubly, and I felt that there was something asked of me as an artist to kind of respond to, if that doesn't sound incredibly pompous and hubristic.
Well, you could look at that in different ways. You could look at that as a look into the past. You know, at this moment, as an individual, you're fascinated with these photographs, which is a great thing. I think in the contemporary context, where everything's expected to be flashy and fast and consumable and a reel on a social media website, and these photos harken back to a different relationship to images. Also, I wanted to pick up on the point you mentioned about internal migration in the United States, which so many of these photos speak to that, right? And so you're talking about also a totally different technological context in regards to communication technology at that time. So people will be moving, let's say, as you talked about, from the central part of the United States to this California or other places too, and you're totally in that context would be totally cut off, you know, in any sort of a quick way to communicate to the people you've left behind, or even to have visual reference points to those landscapes. And of course, this can make you think about how much migration continues to fuel the U.S. economy, but it's a different type of migration. And I think that what you highlighted in telling the story of the photographs also speaks to an important layer of U.S. labor history that actually speaks to, I think, a possibility of understanding and solidarity. A lot of people's families did migrate internally in the United States.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think partially that's what generated these resonances with what's happening at the moment in America. This concern with immigration and with indigeneity and rights to land and to work and to that nebulous thing, the American dream. And it's, yeah, I think it's one of the things that spoke to me quite vividly, this idea of people being dispossessed of their land and having to essentially begin again. And that's a cycle that's happening over and over and over. And this is why, to me, it seems so incredibly cruel, what's happening at the moment in America. And as an artist, you feel, is there some way to express this in a way that helps to generate more resonance and to amplify that signal and to bring things into some kind of coherence? It's It's so difficult because of the way the narratives are spread, and as you mentioned about social media and the way that we essentially don't really in the way that we absorb media and information, we don't tend to look beyond things that affirm our own prejudices and beliefs. So it's difficult to get contrary opinions to actually enter into any kind of dialogue.
Well, your work, Richard, demands that people take a bit more time, without putting it that way. I mean, the nature of these works are actively creating a sense of reflection, and I think the pairing with the photographs also plays with time a bit, both in terms of like the way that your work plays out generally. You're really in the space, like you're in this sonic space for some time, but then with the photos, it's sort of about reflecting on time and the past, in this particular case through the Imperial Valley Project. Maybe just for people listening, if you could just end by talking a bit about this project and in relation to your other broader work, that would be wonderful, and also what you've been up to or anything you'd like to share.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, it's Imperial Valley is something of an outlier in my broader work, which more generally looks towards the natural world and focuses on a much deeper sense of time that eclipses any idea of culture as we know it. So trying to get to a sense of geological time, of something that really the mind can't really comprehend in terms of the vast durations. And music is somehow a really powerful way of communicating that. You can somehow generate a sense of timelessness, even though the music itself might only last 10, 20, 30 minutes an album. So there's something that after 20 years, I don't really understand how that works. And the fact that it's incomprehensible to me makes me, I think, continue to do it. There's a magic in that confounds any idea of how to reduce it to simple terms. And so each time I go and make some music, I'm a spectator to something that I don't really comprehend, and I'm just there for the journey, you know. It's a wonderful thing. And so with Imperial Valley, then sort of introducing voices from the past into it, I've never done that. All my music has been instrumental. It really creates a tension that I'm deeply uncomfortable with, but I really like that sense of discomfort. And that's what I was mentioning earlier about, you know, what are the ethics and the ramifications of using, you know, an excerpt from an O Kings protest in a piece of music. I'm listening to pieces that I'm doing at the moment with those excerpts, and they feel to me really powerful. But I might listen to them in 6 months, and you know, fuck knows what's happened since then. So they might have no further relevance. And so there's a part of me that thinks, you know, what am I trying to do here? Do I take a broader step back? It's, you know, the Imperial Valley project started looking at events that happened essentially almost 100 years ago, and it's kind of like that's almost like a safe distance. The dust has literally and metaphorically settled, and you can approach things with more certainty, whereas with what's happening at the moment, it's really yeah, I really don't know how to come to terms with it. So, you know, as I said, after 20 years of doing this, it feels like a different kind of art that that I'm having to kind of negotiate on a day by day basis. Yeah, so that's where I'm at. I have lots of new Imperial Valley material, and I'm just at the moment trying to work out how it fits and whether it is indeed Imperial Valley or whether it goes under a new pseudonym. I'm quite keen on generating as many of these pseudonyms as I can. So, who knows?
Thank you so much for chatting today, Richard. That was a conversation with artist and musician Richard Skeleton talking about his project Imperial Valley. There's four parts, and you can learn more about it at richardskeleton.net. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thank you so much to the Social Justice Center at Concordia University for supporting this project. We broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m., and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also podcasts. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.